two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is time again for another Jazz Notes podcast. My name is Cleon Wall. You had one from Ben Anderson earlier this week. He kind of talked about what we know so far about the Utah Jazz this preseason. Of course, since that time, the Jazz have played the Portland Trailblazers. On today's podcast, we're going to talk about what we don't know about the Utah Jazz. There'll be a little bit of overlap between the last podcast and this podcast, but I thought it'd be kind of fun to talk about that. And also, it's my next interview in my 10, 5, and 5 series, which I'll talk more about how that last 5 is probably not going to happen. Anyway, before we get to that stuff, let's talk about that Jazz Blazers game really quickly. You know, I really do feel like a broken record. You know, a Jazz opponent comes out on fire. The Jazz struggle with defense to start. Utah gets down early. They can't recover, or they do recover, but they can't hold on to the lead. That's really just how these last two games were played for the Utah Jazz. And I'm sure Quinn Snyder is tired of talking about the lack of defense, but he did it again after that Blazers game on Wednesday night.
You know, we just haven't had consistency yet. I think, you know, we came out and we weren't imposing our will and being the aggressor collectively.
You can tell he's not happy. But I don't sense he's stressed yet. It almost feels like he knows this is an 82-game season and that the past like couple of games, or you could even go back to that Milwaukee game before that, he can tell that he is just trying to get through this preseason teaching, trying to get these guys used to what they're going to have to do on defense. Now, it does all start with effort. I get that. But I think he understands that, and he knows that they're going to struggle early on. In fact, he mentioned before the Blazers game that this team, meaning his Utah Jazz team from last year, and that was a team that brought pretty much everyone back, that they were 18th in defense after 18 games, and then they rebounded. And as I've mentioned before, they were the top defensive team the last 15 games of the season. So you can see that they can turn it around. But why are they struggling so much? Well, you talked to Jeff Green, and he said he's still getting used to playing with Rudy Gobert. Some of these guys, like Jeff Green, they're just trying to get used to the system. They're trying to get used to what's being called out. They're trying to get used to communicating with each other. They're trying to get used to a lot of things. Defense always needs time to catch up. It was interesting. When I was at the game, I was sitting next to some scouts, and one of them mentioned that the Utah Jazz defense has not been good this season. And I believe a Portland Trailblazer person said, well, that's been the same for us too. And they have a whole bunch of new guys. So sometimes defense just needs some time to catch up, to figure out what is the best thing to do. Because every time someone switches a team, they've got a new defensive scheme that they want to employ. And so I think it's a combination of both. It's a combination of new guys trying to get used to what they have in Rudy Gobert, new guys trying to get used to the system, and sometimes it just takes a while to get caught up on what you're supposed to do, especially if Coach Quinn Snyder by the way, why can't I say his name without saying his full name? Just Coach Snyder, especially if he's implemented something new. But what Quinn said was the key. He's seen actually spurts of good defense, but they haven't been consistent. They know what they need to do. They're just not doing it all the time. You know, in the past, when we've talked about why, I used to be on BYU basketball broadcast for KSL News Radio, and I would always ask Mark Durant, why is BYU's defense struggling so much? And it usually came down to two things. One of them, they just weren't good defenders at times. The second one was effort. Are they actually giving effort? And it kind of sounds like, from Quinn Snyder's perspective, that the effort isn't always there. Now, why is it not always there? Well, maybe they're not giving their complete effort or everything because it is the preseason, and preseason doesn't mean anything. Only the regular season means stuff. Maybe it's that they're hesitating because they're not exactly sure what to do and they're trying to figure it out. And so why not figure it out again in the preseason? Donovan Mitchell says it's good that they're taking care of this right now. Preseason record be darned.
I prefer to be 1-4 than 5-0. To be honest, I think, you know, it just shows you, one, puts more of an urgency. You remember how we started last year? Even my rookie year, we started off slow. So, you know, I think for us, it just puts a lot more, you know, a spotlight on what we need to do, you know, and it puts a lot more urgency behind it. You know, I think out of my 3 years here, you know, this is the preseason where I think we've all been on the same page as far as, like, look, this is what we need to do, and the urgency behind it.
Urgency, that's what the Jazz need to focus on right now, being urgent when it comes to playing defense. And he thinks it can actually be done before the Jazz start the regular season against Oklahoma City next Wednesday. I'm a little bit skeptical. I know that they've worked on this stuff through camp, and they've worked on it through preseason games. I'm just not sure they're going to get things completely turned around in 1 week when they play Oklahoma City next Wednesday. But I think they're going to figure some things out. I think if Quinn has not seen enough effort, he needs to do something about it, whether he needs to change the system up to make it easier for some of these guys, or maybe he needs to pull guys. I know that's harsh when you get in the NBA, but it happens. You still see it. Someone doesn't do something, you got to pull them out because games are on the line. Careers are on the line. He's going to have to figure that out. He's got to figure out what he needs to do to make sure that these guys play at their top defensive effort. This team is built on defense. That's what it's been like since Quinn has been here, and also since Rudy Gobert has been here. And no matter how much the Jazz are going to score, they're not going to go very far unless they're a good defensive team. That's what all the pundits out there, the national pundits out there, say or give reasons for why the Jazz are one of the better teams, because they anticipate this team being good on defense. And if they're not good on defense, I don't care how much or how much offense they added or how well they shoot in the game, they're probably not going to succeed, because though they have some good players, they don't have those stars that you just give to the ball and unless you say it's Donovan Mitchell. They don't really have a lot of those guys that you just give them the ball and they take over the game. So it really does have to come down to defense and urgency in defense. And that kind of brings up our what we don't know about the Jazz right now. That we're going to go through a couple of things here about what we don't know about the Utah Jazz right now. So defense, how good will this team really be on defense? Because there's no Jay Crowder, there's no Derek Favors, there's no Ricky Rubio. You could say what you want about Ricky Rubio playing defense. At least he knew how to play the defense. He didn't always play great or didn't always play great at times, but he had glimpses out there of playing well. You don't have any of those guys. You have new guys. I would say give this team 15 games into the regular season. I think that they're going to probably figure some things out. I think that they will kick things up a notch when the regular season starts. You know, and we're seeing that effort actually. If you watch Donovan Mitchell against the Blazers, you saw that defensive effort. You saw it in the second half against the Kings, too. He played excellent defense in that second half. These guys just need to play it good defense each quarter. And I think they'll kick things up a notch to start the regular season. I think if there are problems 15 games in, that's a bit of a red flag. But I think they're going to get things figured out by about 15 games into the regular season. So that's one thing we don't know, you know, how good they're going to be on defense. I don't think they're going to be as good as they have been the past couple of seasons. I think some of those guys that we just mentioned, they were really good defenders, especially Jay Crowder and Derek Favors, especially Derek Favors. They don't have those guys anymore. So I think that you're going to see these guys be good, but maybe not great. They may not be the top defensive team, but if they can somewhere hang out right around number five, in the league, I think that would be a good thing. One other thing we don't know about, and Bennett talked about this, who will be the fifth starter? Well, Joe Ingles, Jeff Green, Royce O'Neal, those are kind of what we've talked about or what we've thought about who those guys could be starters. You know, it's interesting. Before the game against the Blazers, Coach Snyder says that he has used Joe in different lineups. He said that Joe has corporate knowledge so he can kind of tinker with him and kind of let him be the coach out on the floor. I think what you've seen the past few games is what we're going to see here in the future, and that is that Joe's probably going to come off the bench. He's so malleable that he'll probably won't be one of the first guys into the game at whatever wing position there is, and he's probably going to be that guy that is the main facilitator with the second unit. So I would probably say after that, it really depends on lineups. I think if you're going to play quicker four guys, smaller units, I think you're going to see more Royce O'Neal. I think if you're going to see the Jazz go up against bigger units, like when they played Sacramento, I think you're going to see Jeff Green. Who do they favor more? I'm not sure, but it almost feels like they're going to platoon those two guys depending on the team that they play. I think that you're going to see more Royce O'Neal this year, but we'll just kind of have to wait and see. Royce didn't have a great game against the Blazers, but boy, do they need him when it comes to defense. What I like about Jeff Green is how he can get out on the break and what he can do against teams, and he's just such a professional anyway. All right, next thing we don't know about, will Bojan Bogdanović, let me try that name again, will Bojan Bogdanović find his shooting touch? He was 0-for-9 against the Blazers, 3-for-10 against the Kings. He struggled against the Milwaukee Bucks. This is a guy who shot 49.7% last season from the field and 43% from three-point range. Now, I don't know when he's going to find it, but I think he's going to find it. You don't want to bench him now, even if he's struggling. And yes, some of the shots he had last night, and by the way, I'm recording this on Thursday, some of those shots he had against the Blazers, they just didn't look good. It looked like he was forcing. They were way off. So he said he needs some to get into the swing of things because he didn't play competitively during this past season. I really think he just needs more playing time. And I don't think you send him to the bench. I think you need to start him. I don't think you replace him with Joe Ingles. I think Joe is better in the role he's in. I think Bojan would struggle if he had to come off the bench. I really think that he just needs to find a groove and not to force it. And I think he'll be just fine. I would start to be concerned 15 to 25 games into the season. If he's still struggling then, it may be a tough season. But I'd say let's not get too out of hand here and say bench Bojan Bogdanović because he had poor shooting games in 3 out of 4 games in which the Jazz played NBA competition. By the way, about his defense, because we kind of talked about defense earlier, I think what Quinn likes about him, he's not a stopper, but I think what he is that he tries really hard to stay in front of guys. So I think he's actually one of those guys who's actually giving a lot on defense, but sometimes you sag a little bit on defense when your offense isn't playing so well. So I think you're going to see an uptick of both for Bojan Bogdanović. I'd say he will find his shooting touch, but it just may take, you know, 5 to 10 games into the season until he feels really comfortable with this system, and he feels comfortable playing off of the guys who he has and that he's not the main guy anymore. All right, last one we're going to address here. The last thing that we don't know about with the Utah Jazz, will Donovan Mitchell be more efficient? Well, it looks like it so far, if we're going to base it off the preseason. I know we've talked a lot about, well, it's just the preseason, so why do we care? But if you base it off the preseason, it looks pretty good so far. Last game against the Blazers, he was 8-for-13 in the first half. He was 3-for-3 from the three-point line, and he hadn't been efficient from the three-point line in other games, so that was nice to see. Unfortunately, in the second half, he went 1-for-6. He kind of looked like he was trying to take the game over. I don't think he was trying to match Damian Lillard or CJ McCollum because they had great games. I personally think that it was just one of those things that he felt like he tried to take over, and that happened actually in the first half, but it felt like it kind of carried over into the second half, and it looked like he was trying a little bit too hard at times. He's got to realize even if guys are cold, he still needs to pass the ball around. That's not a rip on him. That just happens in games. Sometimes you think you need to do something more than what you're doing, and it's a detriment to you, and it's a detriment to your team, so it doesn't always work out. But I think he actually will be more efficient this year just because of the guys he has around him. You're seeing that he's being more judicious in most of his shots, And so with him being able to do that, I think he will increase his scoring. I think he'll be a better three-point shooter. If he could get to around 37 or 38% when it comes to three-point shooting, he may raise his scoring level up to 25 or 26. Then again, it may not move at all. It may still be down to what it was last season, around 23, because he has Bogdanovich and he has Mike Conley on his team. I actually think he will be a better shooter this year just because of the guys who are around him. There are plenty of shot creators. And if nothing else, if he can just be money when it comes to that screen and roll with Rudy or other guys, and I know it's a mid-range shot and that's what players want to give up, but if he's money there, then that will open up other things for him to do. And we saw it in that Blazer game. At least I noticed it. It felt like every time he came off of a screen and pulled up from like free throw line, so about 15 feet, which is what the Blazers want to give up anyway, if he's money there, yeah, the Blazers are going to say, if you make it, you make it, great. But if he's making that, I think most teams are going to try and find a way to stop him. And that could open up more drives to the basket. It all could also could open up more three-point opportunities. All right, so those are the things we don't know. My opinion on what will or what I think will happen. But those are still a lot of question marks. I'm sure there's even more, but those are just some of the question marks I have going into the regular season against Oklahoma City. All right, need to take a break. Coming up next, five questions for the 10 most interesting Western Conference teams. We're going to focus on the Blazers, and we'll focus on the Blazers with Casey Holdall of Blazers.com.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back into the Jazz Notes Podcast. Five questions for the 10 most interesting Western Conference teams. And the Blazers are very interesting because they've had a lot of change in the offseason. Some of the guys that we got used to seeing, Al-Farouq Aminu, Mo Harkless, guys who couldn't shoot but they were great defenders, they're gone. They have been replaced. And so I wanted to talk to Casey Holdall. And by the way, we caught up before the Jazz played the Blazers. I caught up with him, and he's been on the podcast before. But the last time he was on this podcast, as I mentioned, this team was a lot different. This team, you still have Damian Lillard. You still have CJ McCollum. I know Yusuf Nurkic is hurt, but you still have him. But then again, you also have Pau Gasol. You have Mario Hezonja, Hassan Whiteside. It's weird. I look at this team and I think they're the same because they've got the same core guys. But then they got so many different. It's like they're the same but different. How would you describe this team right now?
I think same but different is a good way to put it. I think the basis, the core of what the Blazers do, which is, you know, a guard kind of dominated offense behind Damian and CJ, and then a drop kind of I wouldn't say vanilla defense, but definitely more of, and not they don't force a lot of steals, so it's more like they try to force mid range shots, which a lot of teams do, and so those principles haven't changed, and they haven't changed actually for a couple seasons now. But as you mentioned, there are a lot of new players, and I believe seven new players. And then when you even get past the new players, you have a number of guys who were on the team last year but who didn't hardly play. So you got a guy in Anfernee Simons who is not a new player to the team, but he appeared maybe in five games last year and only in one game that really actually mattered. And technically that was the last game of the season, which didn't really matter, even though it did change the playoff standings. Yeah. So the notion that this is the same team, but from this perspective of they have a lot of new players and a lot of the players that are returning are taking on prominent roles. A guy like Zach Collins as well, a guy who went from playing, you know, being a regular part of the rotation, but now assumed to be a starter. And you have Rodney Hood, who was only on the team for, you know, after the deadline. So you have another guy where he's a returner, but he only has 20, 25, 30 games of experience with the team. So outside of Damian and CJ, there are quite a few changes, and you know, I think it's yet to be seen whether or not that results in a different change in the style of play, or and if they're able to kind of keep up the quality in terms of their regular season performance, at least, that they've had the last couple of years.
I want to circle back to Rodney just because he played here in Utah. But let's talk about real quickly about Anfernee Simons. He scored 37 points in that last game, and as you said, made a difference in the playoff standings, but you know, it was the last game of the season, and a lot of teams were going with some funky lineups that day. Are we going to actually see more? I mean, you have Damian, you have CJ, those are your main guys, but Simons, you know, are we going to actually see him this season for extended periods of time?
Absolutely. I mean, so Anfernee Simons really steps into the role that both Seth Curry and, I would say, maybe to a kind of a lesser extent, Evan Turner filled last year. I mean, he is the team's backup point guard at this point. So I would expect to see Anfernee playing a whole lot. I mean, Neil O'Shea, the team's president of basketball operations, talked about at Media Day how he felt like Anfernee Simons had as much talent as any player he had ever drafted before. And he drafted Damian Lillard, he drafted Blake Griffin, drafted CJ McCollum. So, I mean, pretty high praise, and typically the Blazers bring their young players along pretty slowly. Usually it's the third year that we tend to kind of see guys who they've been bringing along kind of pop. With Anfernee, they're basically saying he's ready now, we want to get him out there. He didn't play college, he played spot minutes, and actually even calling spot minutes last year would probably be a misnomer. Yeah. He played mop-up minutes a few times. And to go from that and having never played in college to being the backup point guard on a team that went to the Western Conference Finals last year, I think is something that is probably the biggest storyline for the Blazers outside of just Damian and CJ. Is how ready is Anfernee Simons? And we are going to see that early and often because he is absolutely going to play. They want to play him. And even if they didn't want to play him at this point, they don't really have a choice. So he's going to be out there.
Is it a little easier to do that because of the two guys that you have starting? Because you can stagger their minutes and you can always have one of those guys on the floor at all times. Is it a little easier to that? And also on top of that, you have two guys who seem like, at least to me from the outside, who are willing to share and to help a guy like Simons out.
Absolutely. On to the first part, Terry Stotts has typically staggered Damian and CJ anyways. To start the season last year, he tried to do full bench lineups, and it worked for about 2-3 weeks, and then they went back to staggering Damian and CJ. So typically, Damian will play the entire first quarter. CJ will go out sometime. CJ, when do you go out in the first quarter? It's around 6:30. So typically, you know, that, and then the backup comes in. And so that will absolutely help with Anfernee. And the other part, too, is that Anfernee is such a guy. He's one of those, you know, kind of sponges where, you know, you tell him something, he really soaks it up. And both Damian and CJ have really kind of taken Anfernee under their wing and really provided a lot of kind of intense one-on-one kind of coaching and really just kind of some of the tricks of the trade that you need to be in the NBA for a couple of years to learn. And I mean, I think they're trying to get him up to speed in that regard. But I mean, if you asked Damian about Anfernee Simons, I mean, his kind of stock answer is, I expect that Anfernee is going to kind of take over for me when I'm kind of starting the downslope of my career. So I mean, like, there are some enormous expectations for him. So much so where even as someone who works for the team, I get a little nervous about it because I start to think, man, is this going to be too much for a young man like Anfernee to take? And it's just not. He just doesn't seem bothered by it because he doesn't pay a whole lot of attention to those things. And I think that's going to help him as he takes his inevitable lumps here in the NBA.
We know who the number one and number two scoring options are. I think that's pretty self-evident. You've already kind of talked about that. Is there really a number three guy on this team? Is that a guy like a Rodney Hood? Because he was able, while he was here in Utah, on certain nights to be able to take over the scoring load. And then there were other nights that he wasn't able to do that. Is it a guy like that? Is it a guy like Hassan Whiteside? Or is it just kind of whoever's the third best player at the time in the game?
Well, if healthy, it'd be Yusuf Nurkic. I mean, he has, particularly last season, his offensive repertoire has really expanded and was an incredibly efficient scorer last year. Great defensively as well, but I mean, he's not expected to be back until at least February. So to answer your question, more of a you know, contemporary answer, you know, I would imagine it probably it Rodney Hood and Hassan Whiteside. I'm guessing it'll probably be one of those two guys on most nights. The pick and roll with Hassan, he's been injured through preseason, so he hasn't played a ton. And what we have seen, that rhythm just doesn't seem to be there yet. So I'm a bit loath to assume that that's automatically just going to hit as soon as the regular season starts. So my gut tells me that a guy like Rodney Hood is probably more likely. I also wouldn't be surprised if, you know, maybe 10, 15 games it was Kent Bazemore. You know, he's had a really good camp, a guy who plays. You know, we've seen throughout the years that when Terry gets guys into his offense and they tend to have an opportunity to kind of expand their roles a little bit. And that's something I'm expecting to see from Kent Bazemore as well. I do think, obviously, they didn't even think they could get Rodney Hood back. They didn't think, they thought the number would be too high. So the fact that they were able to sign Rodney, I mean, I know that's, the team was ecstatic about that. And I would imagine that he will take on a larger role on both sides of the ball this year for the Blazers. So he would be my first pick, but again, having three guards who are your top three scorers, they do play through the post some. So I just don't know if the number of shots will be there for Rodney to be third, but I could obviously see it happening.
Let's go back to Hassan here for a second. A lot of national people have kind of questioned his work ethic, if he's just a stats hog. How has he been so far through camp for this team? How's he responded to now being starting center for the Portland Trailblazers, at least for right now?
Well, I mean, he is excited about it, but I do think there is kind of a wait-and-see approach because, I mean, we kind of saw something similar with Yusuf Nurkic when he came to Portland. You know, the book on Yusuf was that, you know, he had a kind of a bad attitude. He's maybe didn't put in the amount of work he needed to. They get him in, and, you know, they're able to get him into an environment where he can thrive. And I think that's what they're trying to do for Hassan right now is, you know, with Nurk out until at least February, I mean, Hassan Whiteside is the starting center. So I think, one, that gives a player some confidence that maybe he didn't have or at least had lost in Miami. Two, as I mentioned before, Terry has done a pretty good job throughout the years of getting players from other teams that have maybe kind of lost their way or maybe developed some bad habits and really kind of getting those guys back on track. So I think internally the hope is that Portland's development and the success they've had in developing players throughout the past four or five seasons will translate over to Hassan. But as I mentioned, he hasn't been able to play a whole lot. He rolled his ankle pretty bad in, I believe, the first preseason game. He just said a few days ago that he was only now pain-free. It looked like his elevation and his willingness to jump and kind of his speed is not where he needs it to be right now. So on one hand, I know there's a lot of optimism, and I know that particularly the other part, too, is that both Damian and CJ have kind of a longstanding relationship with Hassan, and the hope is that whatever issues he might have had in Miami, that they will maybe be able to kind of steer him away from those things. But until you see it on the court consistently, I don't think it's fair to say that's just going to happen. So, you know, that is kind of the outside of how ready is Anfernee Simons, what are the Blazers going to get from Hassan Whiteside, I think are the two questions that are really going to be kind of the make or break for this team this year.
I think I've already got one for my allotted question, but I have to ask you one more. I know we're still here. I know it's preseason. I know we've got 82 games to fight through this season. But as far as you can see this team right now, constituted as it is this a playoff team?
I would say it is. I really do believe they are for a couple reasons. One, I think that both Damian and CJ are good enough to where if everyone just plays all right, they're a playoff team. And now, obviously, in the West, it is going to be an absolute dogfight. And part of it is because I would say for the past three seasons, I've projected the Blazers considerably lower than where they ended up. So even as someone who works for the team, like I always felt like you almost had to kind of bake in maybe whatever kind of affinities you have. But I mean, every single year for the past three or four seasons, they have exceeded expectations. And coming off of getting to the Western Conference Finals, obviously getting swept, but I think the confidence they get from that, I think the maturation of both Damian and CJ into really, I mean, Damian being a first-team All-NBA kind of guy, and I think CJ is borderline All-Star at this point. And then to have some of the young talent and a team that's more diverse and has – it's just deeper than it has been. I mean, Portland, we're used to having a really good starting five and then kind of, you know, gritting your teeth when the bench comes in. This year it feels like there's more talent across the team. Now it's new talent. And that chemistry that they had developed over the three or four seasons with guys like Evan Turner and Mo Harkless and Al-Farouq Aminu and Myers Leonard, you know, that's not there anymore. And that has value. So in some respects, you wonder, is losing that familiarity going to have an effect in the win-loss total? And I think the counter to that is it might, but the team really feels like they replaced every one of those players with a better player. And so the hope is that the quality of those players will result in getting back to the postseason, because that is their goal. I mean, heck, they're talking about winning a championship this year. So that is their goal. And again, there have been a team that they haven't missed the playoffs since Damian's first season, and that was when basically they pulled the cord after some injuries. So, you know, at this point, the Blazers are one of those teams, along with, I would put, San Antonio, where until they miss the playoffs, I'm not projecting them to miss the playoffs, because I've been proven wrong before, and I just learned that I'm just not going to make those picks anymore. When it doesn't happen, at that point, I'll say, okay, now we can reassess. But until they've shown that they're not going to get there, I'm just going to assume they are.
Fair point, Casey. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Casey for joining us here on the Jazz Notes podcast. Listen, let's be honest with you. My goal before the start of the regular season is to talk to people from 10 different teams and ask them 5 interesting questions about those teams. 10 interesting teams that I thought were interesting. And it just didn't quite work out the way I've wanted to. I've got through a handful. Hopefully we'll be able to just continue this on through the season so you get to know some of these teams and the guys that cover them. It might be an ongoing project, and it might be more than 10 teams, but it's not going to happen all before the start of the season. And by the way, the regular season does start next week. Oklahoma City coming up on Wednesday for the Jazz, and then the Lakers, and then the Kings. That's all happening in the first week. What a week for the Jazz to start out with. Even with defensive lapses, should be exciting first week of the season. That's going to do it for the Jazz Notes podcast. Thanks a lot for downloading, subscribing, leaving a rating and review. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas,
in the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.